I will get us started. So, good morning, everybody. Thank you for joining today. So, I'm Ruby. I'm not Dan. Dan has a potential call with the BBC for a radio show. So, I am subbing in today. So, I am a managing director within the GRB. I head up our RPO and projects division and support Dan with our graduate recruiters network. Thank you so much for joining. It's brilliant to see so many people joining us for hopefully a really interesting session today on a very fast-moving topic. It's all about AI adoption in HR and the impact that this is having across talent, workforce planning, and organizational capability. So we've seen a huge shift really over the past 12 months, especially with AI being something that organizations were exploring into now something that many teams are actively trying to implement. But obviously, whilst adoption is moving at a rapid pace, capability, governance, and confidence aren't necessarily moving at that pace. So hopefully today's discussion will be really, really valuable for everyone on the call. I will quickly and briefly introduce today's speaker, Lizzie Crowley from the CIPD. So Lizzie is a leading research professional in UK employment and has over 20 years' experience in workforce and labour market research. She leads workforce planning insight at the CIPD and helps organisations bridge the gap between policy, strategy, and practical workforce challenges. So throughout the next 45 minutes or so, Lizzie will be sharing insight into how organizations are adopting AI, what separates responsible and effective implementation from reactive adoption, and what this means for HR moving forward. We will have plenty of time for questions at the end. We'll run through, or Lizzie will take us through the presentation first. But if any questions do come to mind throughout, feel free to pop them in the chat as we go, or feel free to raise your hand during the Q&A session at the end. But yeah, thanks again, everyone, for joining us this morning. And I will now hand us over to Lizzie to take us through.
Fantastic. And thanks for that introduction. So today I'm going to share some findings from CIPD research looking at how organizations are approaching AI adoption and what this means for work skills and workforce capability. And so the insights I'm going to provide today draw on two strands of research. First, action research, which happened over the last year and gives us a real detailed understanding about how AI adoption is unfolding in practice. And then secondly, a survey of over 1,300 HR professionals and leaders, senior leaders, which help us understand the broader picture across organizations in the UK. I'm not going to try to cover everything in a huge amount of detail because we don't have time, but what I want to do is draw out some of the key themes emerging from the evidence, particularly around organizational readiness, workforce transformation capability, and in particular, the implications given the audience today on early career pathways, which is an area we're increasingly interested in exploring with employers. And what's been particularly striking throughout the research is that organizations are often moving at pace on adoption, but much less quickly on redesigning work skills and progression pathways around these technologies. And I think that creates some real important questions for both the profession and also early careers professionals in particular. So I'm going to start off with some of the broad organizational findings and then move into what this might mean for graduate and early career pathways specifically. So I think this is probably the central challenge that's been emerging from the research. AI adoption is accelerating much faster than the organizational capabilities and skills to manage its workforce implications effectively. So what we found is that many organizations are experimenting with AI or integrating it into parts of their business, but far fewer are systematically redesigning work, skills, and progression pathways around it. And one of the clearest findings from the research is outcomes depend less on the technology itself, but on how organizations redesign work and support their people to adapt. So increasingly, this is not just a technology story, it's a workforce transformation story. And I think that distinction matters because much of the public discussion around AI still tends to focus heavily on the technology itself. But what we saw repeatedly through the case study organizations that they struggled less with accessing tools, but more on embedding them consistently, redesigning workflows, engaging employees, managing risk, and understanding the implications for capability building and progression. So a good place to start with the data is on the current state of play. And actually what I found quite surprising when analyzing this is that actually AI adoption is already widespread. We found that around 84% of organizations that were surveyed reported some use. However, much of this was still in its relatively early stages. So you can see those kind of purplish bars which shows sort of the proportion who describe their adoption as ad hoc or experimental, and that was around sort of 45% of businesses, and only a small percentage, 7% actually reported that they had adopted a kind of genuine strategic organization-wide approach to the use of AI. And we also saw considerable variations by sector and by organization size. Unsurprisingly, smaller firms are much more likely to be at the experimental stage or not using AI at all. Although even many of the larger organizations remain at the early stages of adoption. So overall, there's a high level of activity, but much of it is still exploratory rather than embedded. And I think that's important in context because some of the wider narrative can imply that organizations are actually much further ahead than where they actually are. But in practice, many organizations are still trying to work out where AI genuinely adds value, which use cases are most effective, what the risks are, and how they should integrate these tools into existing ways of working. So while adoption may be widespread, maturity is still relatively uneven. And what's interesting from the case study work is that adoption has not always been driven by a clearly articulated organizational strategy. In many cases, organizations are responding to external pressures, and these include shadow AI use by employees, vendor-driven solutions, competitive pressure, and wider narratives around technological change. And so several organizations in our case study work describe situations where employees had already started to use tools informally before the organization had developed any governance or a strategic approach around them. Others talked about pressures from vendors or competitors and a sense that they needed to move quickly in order not to fall behind. So what we're seeing is that organizations often feel a pressure to act, but they have much less clarity around the implications for work skills and workforce capability. So there's obviously a huge amount of talk out there about whether AI will create and destroy jobs. And over time, you know, we know it will certainly do both. But what we're seeing in the near term is something more nuanced. Across the case study organizations, AI adoption was more commonly associated with changes to tasks, workflows, skill requirements, and workload intensity, rather than immediate job displacement. And the survey evidence kind of broadly supports this. Around two-thirds of employers don't expect AI to reduce headcount over the next year. And even amongst those expecting reductions, the anticipated impact is often relatively modest. And this aligns with wider OECD evidence, suggesting that AI is currently more likely to reshape tasks within jobs rather than eliminate roles outright. But it also raises important questions about how work changes, how skills are developed, and whether organizations are planning effectively for those shifts. For instance, several case study organizations describe jobs becoming more supervisory or evaluative in nature, with employees increasingly reviewing, validating, or refining AI outputs. And I think one of the key implications is that organizations need to think much more carefully about what skills people need, what experience people lose if tasks disappear, and how capability is built over time. However, at the same time, the survey does seem to point to a clear relationship between AI adoption and perceived job performance. So what the chart here is showing is that organizations move from experimentation to a more integrated strategic adoption, the proportion reporting improved job performance amongst employees increases quite significantly. Yet even at the experimentation stage, over half of organizations report some improvements. However, those gains significantly increase as adoption deepens. And more importantly, the case study evidence suggests that these gains are not automatic. The strongest outcomes appear where AI is embedded into workflows and supported by broader organizational changes around work design, learning, and capability development. So I think that's a really important nuance. The research doesn't suggest that simply adopting AI tools automatically produces productivity gain. Rather, organizations are much more likely to realize the benefit when adoption is connected to workflow redesign, employee engagement, and broader organizational change. So the kind of key point here is that the capability to support that within businesses becomes more important than ever. To explore this further, the survey looked at organizational readiness for AI adoption. So we combined kind of four indicators around capability and skill areas that emerge very strongly from the action research. And the first one was workforce transformation capability, whether organizations are able to anticipate how AI will reshape roles and skills and redesign work in response. Second, governance capability, having the oversight, accountability, and risk management around AI use. Third, infrastructure capability, the systems, data, and processes needed to support adoption. And finally, culture, where organizations create space for experimentation, learning, and employee engagement. So taken together, these capture the conditions needed to translate AI adoption into meaningful organizational improvement. And I think the really important point here is that only one of these areas is primarily technological. Most relate to people, work, and organizational systems. So increasingly, effective AI adoption appears to depend on how organization capability and skills support how organizations learn, how they redesign work, how they engage with employees, and how they create trust around adoption. However, what the survey evidence shows is that experimentation with AI is often happening ahead of the organizational capability needed to manage it effectively. So this chart shows organizational readiness by stage of AI adoption. And what you can see is that organizations at the experimentation stage are heavily concentrated in the low readiness category, with very few reporting high organizational readiness. And as organizations move to more strategic and integrated adoption, that proportion of readiness does increase significantly. Now, experimentation itself is not a bad thing. It's often how organizations learn about emerging technology, but widespread experimentation in low readiness environments increases the risk that adoption remains fragmented, superficial, poorly governed or disconnected from workforce planning. And the case study evidence really reinforces pattern. A number of organizations describe how difficult it was to move from isolated pilots to trusted, systematic organizational use. So one of the things that increasingly emerges here is that organizations can get stuck in a kind of perpetual experimentation phase if they don't build the surrounding organizational capability and skills needed to support scaling and integration. And one of the most significant challenges emerging from the work is that many organizations still lack structured approaches to anticipating how AI will reshape work and skills. Across several of the case studies, HR and people professionals were not consistently involved in early decisions around AI adoption. Technology initiatives were often primarily led by IT or innovation teams, and the workforce implications were considered much later on. And the survey evidence reflects this. Among organizations experimenting with AI, relatively few report structured job redesign processes, having reskilling strategies in place, Having systematic skills intelligence to understand how work is changing, and have very few have workforce planning activities linked to AI adoption. By contrast, organizations that take a more strategic approach, if you look at the kind of gray bars in that chart, are much more likely to report that they have these practices in their businesses. And I think this matters because organizations are much more likely to manage AI effectively if they're proactively considering what tasks will change, what skills will become more important over time, where learning opportunities may disappear, and how roles will evolve. And without that, organizations risk responding reactively rather than strategically as work changes. The research also found significant gaps in organizations' approaches to learning and skills development. Where training exists, it was often narrowly focused around a specific tool rather than helping employees understand how work is changing, where AI should or shouldn't be used, or how roles may evolve over time. And many organizations experimenting with AI also report limited time and resources for learning and experimentation. And again, this matters because organizations adopting AI without investing in their learning systems and adaptation capabilities may struggle to realize long-term value. And one of the themes that came through very strongly in the case study research was that skills and capability development often lags behind adoption itself. People are expected to adapt quickly, but organizations had not necessarily created the time to learn, structured support, or opportunities to experiment safely with AI. And that can undermine both adoption quality and employee confidence. And what we also find is that governance is another area where many organizations were still developing their capability. So we found that around only half of senior leaders reported that they were confident in understanding the legal responsibilities related to AI or overseeing ethical review processes. So this chart shows governance capability by the stage of AI adoption. And what you see is that organizations who are just still experimenting with AI are much more likely to report low governance capability. However, as they move to a more strategic approach, the proportion increases significantly. But I think kind of the cautionary thing that we need to take away from this particular chart is that even organizations at that more strategic end of the spectrum are still relatively weak in this area. And this finding was reported very strongly from our action research activity, with several organizations describing the current environment is feeling like the Wild West, with significant uncertainty around, you know, what was acceptable use, how do you understand accountability, what are the regulatory expectations, and where should decisions sit within the organizations. So in many cases, organizations were trying to build the governance structures whilst adoption was already happening at pace across different parts of their businesses. And I think also this matters much more from a trust perspective and not just a compliance perspective. So employees are much more likely to engage positively with AI adoption where there was transparency, there were clear boundaries around use, and a clear understanding about how their jobs would change. And what we actually found as a good example in one organization, they described it as tissue rejection, was that because they weren't involved in the process and it wasn't trusted, employees actually didn't use the tool because they were very concerned about the potential for future job loss. So this all raises important questions about what are the HR leadership skills that are increasingly important? And how can we measure whether there are particular kind of skill gaps? And I think this is where some of the findings become particularly interesting, because one of the things we increasingly saw through the research was that capability differences within HR and senior leaders shape not just outcomes, but also how organizations understand AI workforce implications in the first place. So one of the encouraging findings from the work is that organizations are not starting from zero here. Many of the core capabilities needed to need to support effective and responsible AI adoption already exist across HR and leadership populations. And the challenge increasingly is not simply a lack of skills, but how effectively those capabilities are being applied in practice. And I think that's quite important because sometimes discussions around AI imply that organizations need an entirely new set of skills to be able to manage change. But many of the core capabilities are actually very familiar to HR and leadership populations. So workforce planning, change management, employee engagement, governance, and skills and capability development. So what we find is that with a relatively strong confidence across several important capability areas. So this chart brings together the confidence levels amongst senior leaders, HR leaders, and HR professionals in a number of AI-related capability areas. So they were particularly confident around identifying AI opportunities for their business, balancing innovation with risk, ethical workforce data use, and the practical adaptations to AI tools. So many HR professionals are already adapting practically, learning how to use AI tools and understanding their limitations. So I think clearly there's some important foundations already in place. However, what is somewhat concerning is that confidence actually becomes much weaker around workforce transformation itself. And that's where the next slide becomes important. So as I mentioned, confidence does seem to drop significantly when respondents move from adaptation and governance into workforce transformation capability. And this chart focuses specifically on the kind of HR leader population and around sort of a number of workforce transformation activities. And what we can see is that confidence is notably lower in areas such as the ability to estimate workforce future needs, the ability to redesign reskilling pathways as a result of AI, being able to map how tasks will change within jobs, and confidence in the ability to lead structured job redesign processes. So I think that there's a real challenge that this workforce transformation capability appears actually much less developed, and that's also echoed in the organizational lens that I took us through within the first part of this presentation, because these are exactly the capabilities that are needed if organizations are going to ensure that AI adoption translates to effective long-term workforce transformation. And importantly, these differences in self-assessed capability are strongly associated with organizational outcomes. Respondents reporting stronger HR and leadership capability were significantly more likely to report that job performance had improved when linked to AI adoption. So the findings increasingly suggest that workforce skills and capability and organizational readiness are not just peripheral issues. They are central to whether organizations are able to translate AI adoption into meaningful performance improvements. And one of the more interesting patterns also in the survey is the perception of AI's impact on the workforce by levels of self-assessed capability. So what we see in this chart is that respondents who had lower confidence in their AI capability are generally more likely to anticipate a straightforward workforce reduction. However, by contrast, if you look towards the right of the chart, those with stronger capability present a much more nuanced picture, recognizing that AI is often reshaping tasks and workflows and skill requirements within jobs rather than simply replacing roles outright. But also they seem to have a much more nuanced picture of the extent to which AI will both decrease but increase opportunities, job opportunities within businesses. So stepping back from that, the detail, I think there are probably three main messages emerging from the research. First, that AI adoption is moving faster than organizational readiness to ensure that actually it leads to increased performance and better job quality. Secondly, that capability appears to be one of the key differentiators in organizational outcomes. And third, that workforce transformation...
Hello, I'm speaking.
Hello? And third, workforce transformation capability is becoming increasingly critical as AI adoption deepens. And I think collectively, those findings raise some quite important questions about how organizations redesign work, develop skills, and maintain long-term capability pipelines. So I think one of the key implications from this work is that organizations increasingly need to rethink some fairly fundamental questions: how work is designed, how skills are developed, how productivity gains are reinvested, and how progression pathways are maintained. And I think these become particularly important when we look at early careers pathways, because entry-level roles often sit exactly at the intersection of routine task exposure, learning by doing, and capability building. And one of the key findings emerging from our research is the potential impact of AI on early careers. This is becoming an increasingly important issue and one which is generating real concerns amongst our members, particularly around skills development, progression pathways, and the implication for future talent pipelines. So what I want to do now is explore this in a bit more detail and hopefully use the question session at the end to understand actually what you are seeing in practice as practitioners, because this is still an emerging area, but we're seeing early signs and signals and concerns through the research. So there are a few particular reasons why early career pathways might be particularly exposed. So we know that around 40% of jobs are exposed to AI according to the IMF. And importantly, that exposure is concentrated in more routine task-based work. And that's exactly where many entry roles are concentrated. At the same time, early career development often relies heavily on learning by doing, building foundational capabilities through repetition, observation, and practice. So AI is not simply just changing jobs, it may also begin to reshape how people learn and develop at the very start of their career. And I think that's one of the really important emerging issues here is whether some entry roles might begin to shrink in size or scope as organized automate more routine cognitive tasks, but also sort of what it means for developmental kind of progression pathways further down the line if those pathways shrink and organizations struggle to get enough people experience to fill those mid-career and leadership roles. So what we're actually seeing from the research is that many organizations are concerned around how AI is reshaping how early careers employees build their skills and experience within organizations. And what they're concerned about is potentially the reduction to exposure to those foundational tasks, the risk around rising expectations of the skills required for those entry-level hires, and the changing skill requirements sort of much earlier on in an individual's career. But there's also the broader strategic question around the shape of the future shape of entry hiring itself. If organizations are able to automate or heavily augment parts of routine entry-level work, some employers may begin reducing the number of the entry-level roles they recruit into. And that's where this issue becomes particularly important from a long-term workforce planning perspective, because organizations will still need experienced and highly capable people 5 or 10 years from now. But those capabilities are usually built progressively through entry-level work and developmental roles. So there's a real risk here that organizations optimize for the short term whilst unintentionally weakening the future talent pipeline. And several organizations and wider discussions have already raised questions around this, whether graduates are getting the same exposure to core tasks as they did before, whether learning pathways are narrowing as a result of automation of particular tasks within roles, and whether employees become dependent on the tools before developing deeper expertise. And I think that within the literature, sort of that's called kind of skills erosion, stress, cognitive offloading. So I'd be really interested to have a bit of a discussion later about what people are already starting to observe in practice. And moving on to a few more of those risks, I've already mentioned through the action research, participants were already beginning to identify several risks in this area. So I mentioned skills erosion, and that's the kind of the lack of learning by doing opportunities, the ability to build foundational skills through practice. Secondly, work intensification, where time saved through AI is quickly filled, expectations increase, and employees are expected to produce more and oversee AI outputs. And then just from some anecdotal evidence in that space, a large financial organization I was talking to recently just said that they were seeing higher levels of burnout amongst their graduate cohorts. Thirdly, disrupted progression pathways as roles and career ladders become less clear. And finally, what organizations describe as an efficiency trap, focusing on narrow time and cost savings rather than long-term performance capability and job quality. And I think that final one is particularly important here, because organizations may save time in the short term, but if they weaken developmental pathways or capability pipelines, they're going to be creating much longer term and capability problems in the future. So the challenge for organizations here is increasingly, how do we redesign early career roles so they remain genuinely developmental while still capturing the productivity benefits of AI? And this is not just about individual roles, it's about long-term capability pipelines. If they become smaller, narrower, or less developmental, organizations may find it harder in the future to build the skills and experience needed further up in the organization. And I think this is probably one of the most important strategic questions emerging at the moment. So historically, many organizations have relied on relatively large entry-level populations to build future organizational capability over time. So people develop judgment, confidence, and organizational understanding gradually through exposure to work managers and colleagues. However, if those become much more narrow over the time, or they reduce the populations that are going into those roles, there's a real challenge for thinking about long-term organizational capability. So these are some of the questions we're going to be exploring next at the CIPD, and I'm kicking off a big research program looking at some of the risks around entry-level hiring and the impact of AI and jobs. But more particular, how do we support the profession with the tools and the resources to ensure that actually they're not weakening long-term capability at the expense of short-term productivity gains, understanding where if developmental tasks are disappearing from roles, how do we ensure that we're building the learning and organizational capability so we're not losing those skills in the future, and thinking about how do we redesign potential entry pathways into organizations, perhaps, for instance, through more effective uses of apprenticeships and other early careers vehicles. I'd be really interested to understand what people are seeing in practice on the ground, given the experience of individuals in this call. It'd be great to have a bit of a discussion now at the end of this presentation. So should I stop sharing my slides now?
Brilliant, Lizzie. That was really, really insightful. So next, a chance to ask any questions that you have for Lizzie. There were two questions submitted on the booking. So I guess we'll start with those whilst everyone's thinking of their questions. Feel free to pop them in the chat or raise your hand. So firstly, a question from Emma, who I think is on the call, Emma Cooper. Lizzie, what do you think are the most impactful things that AI are doing for both HR practitioners in their roles and in supporting the wider business as well?
I think the challenge is that it's so diverse in terms of potential use cases. So in terms of the most kind of impactful kind of area within, it'd be very difficult to kind of narrow that down specifically. I think kind of what we're seeing though from the work itself is much less about what the tools are doing and much more about how the profession is supporting individuals adapt and how they are designing the jobs around the technology. And what we're seeing is actually that's the area where organizations are perhaps the weakest when it comes to that activity. So what we saw through the work is that many individuals within businesses were actually finding that they were expected to do more. So they were seeing that their jobs were actually getting quite difficult. So I think that would be the key thing. In terms of AI within the HR profession itself, that's one area which is that my colleagues within the team are looking at in particular. And I think kind of the real challenge there within the profession is understanding the ethical and responsible use of AI within things like recruitment, within things like performance management. So I think it's very much an emerging area, and where we are spending quite a lot of our time trying to support the profession with the tools and resources so they can feel much more confident about using AI within the kind of HR function itself.
Yeah, that's quite interesting. We have because we work with many clients within the GRB, we've got each client is very different in how they've approached it and the levels of governance. And we've got one client in particular that their legal team have said within recruitment, you cannot use AI to make a decision on a candidate at all. That has to be something that comes from a person kind of reviewing an application. Do you think... I guess what are your thoughts on that level of governance? Is that something that you see will become a blanket policy, or do you think it depends how the technology changes?
Well, I think we can see from the government that they are really being quite light touch, as it were, in terms of setting the kind of regulatory environment for AI use. So there are some emerging frameworks that are being developed by organizations, but I think that's really kind of what we found though through the research is that, you know, that was acting as a real brake on innovation because of the concerns around sort of adoption and compliance and so on. But I do think, you know, ensuring that there's a human in the loop, I think is the key term, particularly within the recruitment process, is a real important checks and balances approach to have.
Yeah, brilliant. And then there was one more question submitted prior from Pete, who's on the call. Do you see the AI adoption is an enabler to productivity as opposed to a replacement?
Yes, I mean, I think that was one of the clear findings from the research is that, organisations were reporting improved job performance as a result of adopting kind of AI tools. I think, though, from the case study evidence, a much more nuanced a pattern evolved. So one particular organization, as an example, introduced a tool to support kind of bid writing processes. Mm-hmm. But actually what they found, they were losing more as a result of it. So the technology didn't lead to improved performance in that particular kind of example. And also as another example, within an organization who had, for instance, automated a lot of call center tasks, what they saw was their investment in that technology ended up being outweighed by the kind of the increase in turnover, because the jobs that were left were incredibly intense. So they got all the really difficult calls, the things the chatbot couldn't resolve were ended up with them. And so their turnover within the team got incredibly high and the recruitment costs spiraled. Because I think that kind of really points to being much more deliberate about what the skills, what the jobs look like that remain, ensuring that, for instance, if they say that 20% of the kind of easy calls could have been done by those agents, and then they could have had, you know, 80% of the more difficult ones, you know, if they'd taken much more kind of deliberate approach to actually thinking about what those jobs look like, that in that case, the tool could have led to, you know, increased performance.
Brilliant. And then a couple from the chat. So from Willona, businesses are obviously always concerned about profitability and keeping costs to a minimum. How can we influence their thinking in terms of job redesign and planning for the long term? As when things are tight, learning and development is usually the first thing to go or be cut.
Yeah. And I think that really kind of speaks to the heart of my presentation. I think that is a big challenge at the moment. What we've got is a weak economy. We're going to have increased regulation as a result of the Employment Rights Act, and much greater pressure on the HR profession and the function to be responding to that agenda, which is going to take them away from a lot of the stuff that I was talking about today. There's workforce transformation aspects, and as the question rightly put, we know that learning and development activity is one of the first things to go. So I think that will be, we want to ensure that through the work that I'm going to be undertaking next is, how do we equip the profession with the right kind of information to influence those board level discussions around job redesign? How unless you invest alongside the technology, you don't get those performance gains. The real important role of the profession, understanding how skills are evolving within the organization. So I think that AI use is actually really torpedoing the profession right to the top of those organizational discussions, because without the profession, you're not going to get the productivity benefits from investing in this type of technology.
Mm. And then from Gabriella, so she referenced the ISE development survey, so the Institute of Student Employers. Their headline was that AI is beginning to reshape early careers roles rather than replacing them entirely. I guess if you are within early careers, how might you go about thinking strategically about what these roles look like and what needs to change in that respect?
Yes, and I think that survey also, correct me if I'm wrong, but also had some like evidence about how young people were being discouraged now from following their previously chosen career pathways because they were very concerned about the roles not existing. So I think that's a real challenge and a message we need to challenge. Because we know that a lot of these roles are still going to exist. They might look slightly different. That it might be more of a struggle to get the job that you want. But, you know, we don't want our talent pipelines further weakened by young people going, well, there's not going to be jobs in that, so I'm not going to train to do it. So in terms of what organisations need to do, I think that, I mean, I was at a talk with Microsoft recently, and I know it's generally not a great example because they have so much money they can throw at these things, but they were really reconsidering about, you know, how do we retain some of the developmental tasks that, you know, they would have automated. So they were ensuring that their young people who were going into their cyber roles were really building kind of foundational coding skills and knowledge, so that kind of deep T level kind of expertise, that they weren't just removing things just because a system could do it. So I think, you know, sort of that we need to be much more deliberate about what those jobs look like, rather than just them being redesigned by default because, you know, pursuing profitability gains at the expense of kind of weakening those developmental pathways and that tacit knowledge that's built up over time as individuals kind of become skilled up within those early career roles. And I do think that's a big risk because I know from my own work, and I've been using AI to support my research, that unless I had that deep technical knowledge and expertise of the subject area, I wouldn't be able to ask the right questions and to be supported by a large language model, or be able to understand where it was hallucinating or actually getting it wrong, because we know it does.
Yeah, it's absolutely not perfect at all. And like you say, if you've not got that, at least a solid understanding of the subject, how do you know when it is hallucinating? It does make it really difficult. So another question that's come through in the chat from Pete. Could you please expand a little bit more on the AI uses that you've seen businesses apply or adopt?
So this is kind of the use cases. I kind of mentioned one already with the call center work and the real challenge within that particular organization about how those roles had changed and the kind of work intensification. Another one was, as I mentioned, was on the organization who was adopting AI to support the bid writing process, and then sort of finding out that actually it was reducing the proportion of bids that actually won. I tend to think about sort of what would be another. I mean, the challenge is that they are so diverse. They're related to individual businesses, individual businesses' business models. We do have all of the case studies on the website, though, which do explain the kind of particular aspects that AI was being used to kind of automate tasks within roles. So I do encourage people to go on there and have a look, because they really kind of set out what some of the pitfalls might be. So in many cases, as I mentioned, it just wasn't really about the tool itself. It was much more about how they were supporting the employees to adapt their work alongside it. Because in many cases, I think another example is when AI was introduced to support individuals' jobs within a financial services company. And whilst what they actually saw was that men were much likely to use it than women. And so all of the work they'd done over the last 10 years to narrow their performance gap and their pay, their gender pay gap, it widened it considerably. And I think that, again, that comes back to ensuring that actually individuals are supported to adapt, in particular if you're thinking through sort of older populations in the workplace. Sorry, it wasn't a particularly good answer around the kind of different use cases, because they are just so varied. I think that is a challenge. I mean, I don't think it would be that hugely helpful to talk through them in particular detail, because they are incredibly different.
And I guess on that vein, if you are, say, a business that's currently at that experimental phase, looking to get towards implementation and then eventually more strategic, how would you start that process necessarily? How would you look at and think, right, this is what we need?
Well, I think kind of what we were seeing within organizations was developing the evidence for the use cases, so working alongside IT to pilot approaches within organizations, within particular parts of the business, developing the use case proposal, identifying the kind of potential kind of performance gains, understanding actually then what that meant for the changes to those individuals' jobs who had parts of their roles augmented, and then engaging in a process that ensured that you had a really strong communication strategy once you're thinking about rollout and scaling and bringing people along with it. And I think kind of one of the what we see is most effective as well is ensuring that a small group of people, for instance, have safe space to experiment. I think some organizations just talk about it as sandboxes. So identifying shadow use, AI use within your business. So employees are likely already using it, even if you haven't integrated tools internally. So identifying who those people are in a trusted way, creating kind of a network of potential AI champions who can be testing out, trialing tools within your business, but within a safe way. And then sort of support you, ensuring that you've got those strong employee engagement processes in place. Because I think that, that what we found from our case studies is that there is a lot of fear amongst the workforce about AI and the impact that it might have on people's jobs. So unless they're actually taking along with that process, what you see is that I think one of the case studies mentioned during the presentation saw kind of that tissue rejection, that what they people were too afraid about the impact on their jobs. They just didn't use the tool.
And Andy's just asked a follow-up question on the bid writing case study that you mentioned. What was the reason that it was unsuccessful? Was it because AI lacked the knowledge or?
Partly, but also because the training that was provided alongside it from the vendor was just incredibly narrow, and it wasn't really fit for purpose in terms of supporting the employees use the proper language to use the tools. And I think we know that actually, you know, a lot of it depends on the data that organizations have and the ability of the kind of large language models to be able to read that, interpret and draw it together. So there was an aspect of it. The tool actually wasn't integrated sufficiently into their business to have that all of that background information on previous bids, which ones were successful, you know, what kind of aspects of them made them more likely to win. So it wasn't drawing off enough organizational knowledge, as well as it didn't have, as Andy mentioned, the tacit knowledge that a human would have.
Thumbs up from Andy there. Any other questions from the chat? I had a quick question. When you showed the adoption rates between different size businesses, obviously there's a lag when it comes to SMEs and even medium-sized businesses that maybe don't have the budget or the scope to be able to throw everything at this. If you are in, say, a smaller business or potentially don't necessarily have the resources to really try everything, where do you start or what questions do you ask to kind of get started with it all?
Well, it depends obviously what you want to potentially use the technology for and how it's going to support your kind of business overall. So I think what we see in small firms is that many of them lack a lot of both the people management capability, but also about the leadership and business skills to understand whether investments will lead to growth. But there are loads and loads of free tools out there. So I think that if you are thinking about how do I adopt AI, but it's not going to cost me any money, but might improve performance internally, I think it is about allowing your employees to experiment, but in a safe way. So making sure that they know that they can't add data into some of these large language models, which aren't kind of within private systems. And, you know, sort of then thinking through, well, actually, where does this add value? How could this support my business objectives? But we definitely need some more support from the government in that space, because, you know, a lot of small businesses are in a bit of a vacuum. There's so much training out there and there's so many tools and resources, but ensuring that you select the right one and it's not going to be a risk to your business is critical. And I think we need better support for small firms so they can navigate that.
Yeah. Is it on the horizon with the government, or how long's been string?
I mean, sort of, yes, there is activity going on. The small business minister, you know, has spoken about this. However, I think at the moment that, you know, what we get is that they say there's no money. So I don't really see that there's going to be a business and innovation support service for small firms. in the future. However, there is government guidance, for instance, on the use of AI in recruitment, which we fed into CIPD, ensured that practitioners' views are taken into account. There will be light touch governance support, and the government has also got a, I don't think it's very good, but it's an AI skills hub where they've kind of co-located a lot of courses to build basic foundational AI skills, and also kind of more targeted specialisms. So I don't think it's very good.
No. What I have done is I've linked to the CIPD's AI webpage, which has obviously your guides and some case studies there. So do check out that link if you're interested. It's in the chat. But we will leave it there for today. So I'll just run through a couple of closing slides. So yes, thank you ever so much for joining us today, everybody. The recording will be emailed out, and that will be sent within the next 24 hours or so. Our next GRN peer circle is on Wednesday the 5th of August. So I'm sure that will be in the follow-up email as well. We'd love for you to join us. That's normally focused on discussion, where you can hear from peers within the industry on their challenges, and get some strong insights from a wide variety of businesses. And then just as a reminder, so the GRB Group, we operate across multiple different brands, both within the early career space and also within experienced hire. So if you do have any particular challenges, if you just want to talk it through and hear what other businesses are doing, we work with over 400 businesses each year within their early careers across apprentices, interns, grads, and beyond. So we are here if you do have any questions or want to just talk something through. But no, thank you ever so much for today, and best of luck with your AI adoption and implementation. Thanks everyone. Thanks, Lizzie.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye.